My brother saved some money. I never saved any money. And he had $600. I asked my dad to loan me $600 and he wouldn't do it. Went over and borrowed $600 from my aunt. We bought the service station and we had it a year. And I paid back my aunt's $600. And George took his $600 out. And we sold it, and we made $1,200 on the deal. And we had a fellow that was calling on us, was selling reclaimed oil. And he said, why don't you two guys go in and put oil around to these service stations? And we talked about it. And we finally gave it a try. That was in October 1933. We started in business, and we were the second oldest oil company in the area now. All the others have all gone by the wayside over the years.
Explain to me what you do.
We're in the wholesale oil business. We sell solvents and motor oils and used to sell service station supplies and accessories. But after the discount houses come in, they took over all that business, so we went out of that part of it. But we do not handle gasoline, but we handle oils and greases and sell the machine shops and the garages and all that sort of thing. We operate in the southern half of L.A. County and Orange County.
What's the oldest oil company in Long Beach? I have to ask you.
The independents. I'm not talking about the big M.O. Dion and some, who are Shell distributors for Shell Chemicals over on the west side. He started about a year before we did as the Amber Oil Company. Now, his son is running it now. He is not active anymore. His son is running it, but they, all the little oil refineries and all the little oil companies up on the hill, they've all gone out of business, either went broke or been bought out by the larger companies. And there really isn't any of the, about the last one to go off the hill was the old Hancock oil. See, that was taken over by Signal, and then they burnt the plant down here a number of years ago, and they're out of business. In fact, that has been sold, the Hancock oil company was sold to the English outfit.
Really?
Yeah. The name of the outfit. The outfit that owns the motor oil company that makes Castrol.
Oh, okay.
It's an English company, and they own what used to be Signal Oil and Gas.
Were there a lot of little companies like
Castrol? Oh, yes, there were a dozen or 15 little refineries up on the hill. There was Hancock, and across the street was Century. And over on Cherry, opposite Hancock, was one called, I think it was California, and then there was the Elmo Oil Company over down by the freeway, and then out on South Street, where Edgington is, there was another one there on the property where Edgington, there was two there, and on this side of the railroad tracks, there were two, and then south, where you went off of Cherry, back in there were a couple of more. And we were all over the place.
Yeah, I can remember some of those on South Street.
Well, you should. You lived out in that.
Yeah.
They were. I can remember one time when salesman, one of the big oil companies, was in to see us. He was in business. This was in the late 30s, I guess, after, or early 40s. And he says, my company wants me to get in out there and see this company's books. And they want to find out who they're buying the crude from and how much they're buying. And how do you, how am I going to do it? Will you help me? And I said, no, I won't help you. We both end up in jail. And he says, well, he, in those days, he says, we're not salesmen. He says, all we are detectives. We're spying on our competitors. And there was a period of time in there when the big companies were trying to either run the little ones out of business, which, of course, they still do to a certain extent, but the only reason that these little companies existed, that they could buy crude oil from all these little independent producing companies. And then the big companies would go in and try to buy the crude oil from under them and dry them up that way, or cut the price on the product they sell and drive them out that way. And over the years, they all disappeared. There's only a few of them that are still in existence. You've got Powering out of Santa Fe Springs, and Sunset over in Carson, and Fletcher Oil in Wilmington. That's about the only independence that's left. The rest of them have either been run out of business or bought out by the big companies.
Why did you get interested in the Native Sons of the Golden West?
During the Second World War, turn that thing off.
Okay. But we can say that you joined during World War
II. Well, I joined the Native Sons during World War II, and after the war was over, and a lot of these people come back that was in the service, and there were a number of them that worked for the city, and there was several popular attorneys here in town that were on the Native Sons, and quite a few of the judges. And prior to World War II and up until the late 50s, the Native Sons were very active throughout the state, and they were most active in Northern California, because if you drove the highways and stopped and seen these markers of all these historical sites, a lot of those was either done by the Native Sons or the Native Daughters, or in conjunction with the local lodge or historical society or whatever. And I think that they've marked some 600 places in the state over the years. And the state took over, the state highway department took over marking some of these things, and then the historical societies started doing this. The Native Sons had to find something else to do, and they support two hospitals in the state on the pilot, one in San Francisco and one in Santa Monica. I think it's St. Francis in Santa Monica, or one of the hospitals over there. They support on this flat pilot, and there's one up in San Francisco that they support.
I'm kind of disappointed, because I was looking through some old, what do you call it, a grizzly bear?
Yeah.
And in the 30s, I thought you were going to say, well, I joined when I was in high school or something.
No.
Because in the 30s, Long Beach had like two chapters, and Pasadena had one, and maybe there was one in L.A., and that's all there were in Los Angeles County. So apparently the Native Sons were extra active in Long Beach.
They had two chapters in Long Beach, and then after the war, now I think they had more. I think the one in Wilmington, the one in San Pedro, was in existence. But after the war, then when I got involved in the Southern California thing, then we put in chapters in Lakewood and Compton and Whittier. In fact, in the Whittier chapter, when we installed a chapter, I was on the installation team that night, and there were some 50 put in, and there was a young attorney from Whittier that was in the class. You know what I'm going to say?
Tell me.
Mr. Nixon.
And you
I was in the installing team when he came in the Native Sons. This was before he got into politics. He was an attorney at that time.
But I thought you could tell me why they were so active in Long Beach even before, but I guess...
Well, Long Beach is an old town. Yeah. I mean, you have Los Angeles, Long Beach, Santa Ana,
yeah.
Westminster, and that was it, see?
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of the things, all Anaheim, of course,
yeah.
But the Native Sons, they had Santa Monica, down the beach, Inglewood, and all we had was we must have had 40 or 45 chapters in Southern Park, but up north, guys, they had 400 or 500. They have a little town up there. You go up on Highway 49, and every little town used to have a Native Son chapter. In when the Native Sons started, and they're 115 years old now. 110 or 115 years old. When they started, they actually controlled the state. And up until after World War II, they were very active. Most of the judges were Native Sons. A lot of your politicians were Native Sons. But after World War II, now today, there's very few Native Sons. All the people that are in there now are people that have come from other states in politics and all these deals. And the Native Sons do not have the influence of that they had in the early days. You see, the Native Sons were responsible for the state law that was put in that kept the Orientals from owning land in California, and they never rectified that mistake until, 15, 20 years ago.
Okay, that's very interesting.
But, are we on tape?
Yes.
Jerry Brown is a Native Son, but I don't think he belongs. Now, his father was very active in the Native Sons. And we have Clarence Hunt with his law firm in town.
Yes.
He is very active, and his father
was the historian.
Was the historian up at the College of Pacific, and he's written. He's one of the top historians in the state, and his father was a Native Son.
Yes, it's very how did the area you have been in business in the same place?
Yes,
or
since 1933.
But that's the same location?
Yes.
How did this area change
This was an industrial area, and then as the people come in and build houses in the industrial area, and of course then they come in and try to get zoning one way or another, and then when Long Beach decided that they didn't like the industrial area on the other side of town, then they was going to try to do away with this, but they couldn't do it. But they have ran a lot of the industries out, but now the city has a program that they're going to rezone the whole city. Here in the last couple of years, they've been having these meetings all over town. I've gone to a number of those. And their proposal now is to redo the whole city. Of course, they're in the act of tearing down the main part of it downtown right now. But they claim that over the years, that the city of Long Beach has four times as much land zoned for commercial that they need, and they would like to de-zone 75% of the commercial property in Long Beach. They claim there's enough commercial property zoned for business in Long Beach to stand a population of 1 million people. And I don't think we want 1 million people. But their proposal is to take all the business off of Pacific Coast Highway and have no parking, and have that an expressway to get everybody that works this way into Orange County and vice versa. They want to, they will leave the business on Anaheim Street. They want to take all the business off of 4th Street. And they want 7th Street, they want to use them as an expressway. And I don't think they're going to get away with that, because they had some real good arguments over that one. And the original proposal was also to take all the business off of Redondo. But I don't think that they're going to get away with that. But over the years, the city allowed anybody with any pull to rezone anything they wanted to, whatever they wanted to build. And they've ended up with such a conglomerate of zonings that if you go down to City Hall, you can't get a straight answer today on what your property's zoned. Really. But whether they will ever straighten it out or not, I don't know. Property over across the flood control in Santa Fe, that was supposed to be all commercial. But when you get Pacific Coast Highway north, it ended up mostly houses.
Yeah.
The original plan, and that was to be the commercial area.
So, in the 30s and in the 40s, did the oil business kind of come back and help East Long Beach?
Well, after the boom from the oil.
Yeah.
And then when you had the depression, the oil field was single hill and out toward Dominguez, and that was all developed.
Yeah.
And what brought your next boom was when they found oil in 1938 in Wilmington.
Yeah.
And this field that's off of the shore of Long Beach, you know, that is the Wilmington oil field.
Yeah.
Well, then as they come and they decided to develop the oil offshore, they went to the voters and asked for permission to build the islands and lease and everything. At that time, when this was in the talking stage, I was on the oil committee of the Chamber of Commerce. And I remember when everybody was trying to get in the act and the proposals on how they were going to develop that. And I can remember a man come down there with all of his maps made. He had the solution. He was going to go north of Ocean Boulevard and take a couple of blocks there and tear all the buildings down, dig a hole down under Ocean Boulevard and out under the ocean, and have a big room out under the ocean there and put all of his oil wells and all these equipment there. We're going to have two or three of those along the beach. And they never approved of that one.
When was this? Approximately.
When they were...
in the late 30s?
The Wilmington deal started in 38.
Yeah.
This would have been in the 40s.
Oh.
The early 40s.
That's
right. Right after the war.
Yeah, that's kind of odd, because the technology to drill from something like those oil islands existed then.
Well, but the argument was with the people that along Ocean Avenue and Belmont Shore, they didn't want anything in the ocean. I mean, that was theirs, and they didn't want anything, and they finally came up with building these islands. But see, the way they was doing it was like they did up at Santa Barbara and the Goleta and those places, yeah, and put piers out in the ocean, and they didn't want that. See, they didn't want that sort of development.
Yeah.
Or just build platforms out there, and they wanted something to look nice, and there were a lot of different proposals, but this is the way it ended up. It ended up, I think this is probably the best way, because it looks nice out there, they keep it nice, and a lot of people, I've had people come up to me and say, how do you get out there to rent one of those hotel rooms out there on one of those islands?
By that time,
the technology existed
to
mm-hmm.
do that kind of thing.
Yeah. When did you join the Chamber of Commerce? Early 40s. I never did belong to the junior chamber. I belonged to the senior chamber. And I was active for 4 or 5 years. And then most of their meetings were in the daytime, and it got to the point where I was busy in the daytime, and I couldn't get to enough meetings, so I finally had to drop out.
What What other kind of civic organizations do you belong to?
Well, we have the East Long Beach Improvement Association, which is one of the oldest local organizations in the city. And it's been in existence for years and years and years, and I was active in that, and then it died, and then we revived it once. And I was active in it, and in the Chamber of Commerce, and I guess for a long period of time I've been more active in the Native Sons than anything, because I was active there and went through the local chairs and the county chairs and state chairs and everything. I was active in it for about 25 years.
Okay. I want to ask you something about the East Long Beach Improvement Association. Are they the people that didn't like Zapparia that wanted to change their name to East Long Beach?
No, the name was I don't know whether there was any group. The name was changed, and they had the Zapparia Junction. They were the railroad. And they built a new station over on Anaheim and Obispo. And when they built the new station and opened the new station, I think the railroad was as much responsible as anybody. They changed the name to East Long Beach because they were getting quite a bit of freight business through there on the railroad. And they had the East Long Beach station, and the agent at the station was American Express and Western Union and Pacific Electric and Southern Pacific. And I think that is probably as much responsible, and probably the East Long Beach Improvement Association was in existence long before I ever got interested in it. And they may have had something to do with it. And the town was growing so much, and they used to call this East Long Beach. But if you read the Press Telegram today, and they speak of East Long Beach, they're talking about 3 miles east of here. And so I questioned some of the city officials one day. I said, where does East Long Beach start? And they said, east of Redondo Avenue. So everything west of Redondo Avenue is much farther Long Beach now, according to them.
Yeah. But at that time, this wasn't even part of Long Beach, or was it?
Yes, it was a part of Long Beach when they changed the name. Yes.
When was it incorporated into the city?
This area came in. I was born in 10, and the had the ceremonies for the first pair in 1915. So this was in Long Beach from Loma to Redondo in 1915, or after 1915. And the name was not changed until
1920.
21, I
think it was. Wasn't it? Oh, I read someplace that
it was in the early 20s. It was changed,
yeah.
I think, in 21 or 23. I can remember the day they had the celebration,
yeah.
and they changed the name. There was a big eucalyptus grove over there where the shopping center is, and they had their big party over there. And Mama wouldn't let me go because I'd been sick or something. I don't know, I'd had one of those chilling diseases, and she had me grounded. And then one poor evening when she took me over for a little while, I remember that.
Do you have any idea why it was originally called Zapparia?
Well, I've had people ask me that, and theory for years and years was it was either an Indian name or it was a Mexican name, and wasn't it you that came up with the man's name of Zapparia? Well, people have been looking for that for 50 years, and you're the first one that had come up with that, and I assume that you're probably right.
But I don't have any way to connect him. I mean, you don't...
He was on the board, you said he was on the Board of Education.
Yeah.
And whether he was one of the subdividers in this end of town, he if he was one of the subdividers in this end of town, he was done that prior to my dad coming out here.
Yeah.
And because the name was that when Dad came out here. So if he is connected, or it could have been his father. But that's as good a theory, because no one has ever come out. I have six people on the Lloyd Leadham, and he was pretty good on the history around here, and to the people in the library and everything, and nobody has ever come up with an Indian name or a Spanish name. People that have wrote articles about the area before, see, this is the best lead that I've heard on, because that makes sense. That is not a very popular name, and this person that was on the board, one way or another, must have been connected with this end of town.
Yeah. I wonder if there might be some... This must have originally been Bixby's land.
Well, sure. See,
yeah.
There were only two ranchos. Alameda Avenue is the valley line, and that was Rancho Las Rigas, and this was Rancho Los Alamitos, and people wanted to buy a few hundred acres and subdivide, and the Bixby's would sell it to them.
I wonder, like, which one of them sold it off?
I think that it was sold off in fairly sized pieces, and I think that the land that Dad bought, I don't think he bought it from the Bixby's. I think that he bought it from someone that had bought it from the Bixby's.
Yeah.
And he subdivided because they'd buy a piece of land and build a few houses or something. And of course, really, you wasn't talking about very much money in those days.
When you were a kid growing up around here, were there Mexican people that lived around here?
This area had lots of Mexican people. They were mostly all Mexicans that worked on the Bixby Ranch.
Yeah.
And I went to Temple Avenue School and was raised with Mexican people. My dad rented to them. He sold them lots. And they built houses, and there's a Mexican family lives behind us. There's a couple here, and they both work for the city. These are the sons and the grandsons and stuff, but there were a lot of Italians. There was a group of Italian families in here, too.
The reason I asked about Mexican people is that one of the oldest things that took my eye when I used to ride up and down Redondo with my folks is that there was a church up here with Spanish out in front of it. Yeah.
The East Long Beach Methodist Church.
So and that's why I thought there
people, most people have never even heard of it. It's been there for 50 years.
Well, I don't quite remember that, but that's why I thought...
It's been there 50 years.
Yeah, that there must be Mexican people that live around here in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right.
But some of them used to work for the Bixby?
Well, most of the help on the Bixby Ranch in the line of beans and in the beets was all Mexican help.
And did they live over here? They didn't live on the ranch?
I would say that half of them, or maybe most of them, lived on the ranch. When we go up the hill there, when we was going to the Rancho Los Alamitos, when you go through the gate, go up the hill from Anaheim Street for the pepper trees.
Yeah.
They don't call it Anaheim now, they call it Bixby.
Well, I still think of it as Anaheim Road.
Yeah, from there to the bottom of the hill, on the hill, there was just one Mexican house right after another, all the way down the hill.
But I thought that's where the people that worked at the ranch lived.
But
some of them lived over here, too.
Well, some of them lived in this area. And then you had the Japanese garden. There were lots of Japanese in here.
And did
some of them farm on shares for Bixby,
or did they have their own land?
I don't know on that one. But when I went to grammar school, 17th and Temple. There was a Mexican family that lived on Temple, about four blocks up the hill. It'd be about 21st or 23rd. And his father owned 5 acres there. And they raised crops and sold them. And when they struck oil, the old man quit work. He owned the 5 acres. And he ended up with a couple of oil wells on his 5 acres. And I lost track of the boy. After a few years, I think they moved out of the area, but some of them did own their own land, yes.
Yeah. What are the changes have you seen in this neighborhood? I mean, I'm not asking you, it's a specific
question. What changes?
Yeah.
Well, it's when I was a kid, you could look in any direction and there'd be a scattered house, and you could look forever and it was just fields with oats or weeds or whatever. And as the I think the city claims there's only 50 vacant lots in the whole city of Long Beach today. So it's just they build on every piece of available land.
Was it all built up by the time of World War II?
No. See, this piece here was not subdivided until 1940, and then the war stopped it. Of course, there was no building during the war. There was only I built this in 42. We took out the permit on the Pearl Harbor was on December the 7th, wasn't it?
Something.
And we took out our building permit on December the I guess we'd taken our building permit out. We poured the foundation on the 15th of December after
war was
declared. And we moved in April. And when that happened, the what the heck's that real estate guy's name? He's dead. That's Rex Hodges.
Mm-hmm.
He subdivided this, and he built this house for it. And they jumped in and bought all the materials. The floor furnace we have is not a thermostat because the government has already closed the thermostats. We got the last bathtub in Long Beach, the last water heater in Long Beach, and they took them and set them down at my place until they made them, and they bought all the materials. The only way we was able to finish the house.
Where did you live before you moved here?
I lived at 8th and Newport for a couple of years. I got married in 1940, and prior to that I lived with my mother up at on Worley Street. Now it was Cooter Street. It's it's
that's
between Miramar and Grand, and it's the second street north of Anaheim.
Yeah, you were talking to Dave Jess about that.
Huh?
You were talking to
Dave. Fountain and Worley and then 14th Street. And that was a 5-acre subdivision. There was a lot of these 5-acre subdivisions. This is the reason that all some of these streets are all piled up. See, Newport only came to 14th Street. And then when they subdivided this, the city made them cut up through to 15th. When we moved here, Redondo only went to 15th Street. And there was a court that had been built there during the oil boom, sitting right in the middle of where Redondo is now, between 15th and Ransom. So the city bought four lots in there, and they cut Redondo through the Pacific Coast Highway. It dead end. You know, when you go up Redondo now, you make that little S turn. Redondo went straight ahead. And when you make the S turn and go over the hill, that was there was no road there. And when they cut that road through there, on the other side of the hill, when you get on the other side of the hill, that was Newport Avenue, which is this street over here. And then they changed the name to Redondo. But until the road was cut over the hill, everything on the other side of the hill beyond Stearns, that was Newport.
Did your dad name any street?
I don't know.
That's too bad, because apparently a lot of people that build apartment houses and name streets and things name them for their son. So well, maybe there's a James for you around here someplace.
No, no. I don't think he's done that. I've been looking at these old maps, and if you take a map of 1910 of this area, there's only a third of the streets that there is now. And there was only a few streets that went through.
Do you
remember when the Farmers Merchants Bank moved into East London? Or was it always there as long as you can remember?
Why don't you ask
Jeff Walker that? I think he said that they moved in here in 21, I believe. The original building. They built a building there where the bank is now. And they built the whole block. And the bank was on the corner. And the cash store was next door. The cash store had a cash store down on the north side of Broadway, west of Pine Avenue. And they were here for years and years and years. When they finally went out of business, then he tore that building down, and that was a two-story building that had apartments upstairs, and they had the cash store and the bank downstairs.
Okay, so the reason that I wondered if you remember, is that I was talking to somebody today who works at the Farmers and Merchants Bank downtown and delivered things out here. And he remembers riding in it, I forget the name of the bus, but some bus with hard rubber tires and coming out.
B&H Transportation Company,
yes.
They had Marlin buses with solid rubber tires.
Right, yes.
Well, now, in the beginning, they had the jitneys. And they had people in their Model T Fords. Had a jitney line on 10th Street, a jitney line on Anaheim Street, and for 5 cents they would take you downtown. They just go down the street and pick you up, collect the nickel, and they carry a half a dozen people. And they had the jitneys, and then the Long Beach Transportation Company was the first one. And they had two lines. They had the 4th Street line and the Atlantic Avenue line. And then the B&H came in, and that was Betts and, what's the other man's name now? Betts was the B part of it. And they had Anaheim and 10th, and they had a line to Belmont Shore. And then, they put a line out to Virginia City, out Long Beach Boulevard. And then finally, after they got all these lines around, you had three transportation companies in here. You had the Pacific Electric Railroad, you had the Long Beach Transportation, and you had B&H. And so B&H bought out Long Beach, and Pacific Electric quit. And then the National City Lines bought out the whole business. And the National City Lines is responsible for tearing up all the railroad tracks in Southern California. And the National City Lines was owned by General Motors, an oil company, and a tire company.
What does the Lang Transportation Company fit into this? Didn't they
want to
have buses in Long Beach?
Lang bought out B&H. You're right. Lang bought out.
I don't know where they fit in.
After B&H, Lang took it over. And then Lang took over the Long Beach Transportation. And Lang sold out to the National City Lines. Yes. And the Lang Transportation Company was in the heavy trucking business. They used to have trucks that hauled oil and gasoline and crude oil and freight and all of this sort of thing. And they went into the bus business just for somewhere to put their money, was somewhere along the line, I guess.
Anyway, the man I was talking to today who rode the B&H bus out to the East Long Beach Farmers and Merchants Bank said that apparently Shell had a big yard out on Redondo.
No. the back door was on Redondo.
Yeah.
Or on Obispo.
Yeah.
Obispo and 21st.
Yeah.
They built a big building out there. And all the organizations in town used that hall for years and years and years. They had dances, and they would let organizations use it for meeting, and they had their headquarters there for years and years, a number of years.
Yeah, I guess they had a baseball diamond.
They had a baseball, they sponsored a baseball team. And it was a good team. They played all over the state, and they'd done real well.
Yeah, I guess they played against the Pacific Coast League. Pacific Coast League team.
Yes, it was a real good team.
Anyway, he said that on Friday or whenever, when Shell gave out the paycheck, that the workers would come to the Farmers and Merchants Bank, and they'd line up clear out into the street waiting to get their checks cashed.
I asked, at that time there was a fellow by the name of Mr. Miller that was manager of this bank, and after Mr. Miller was Mr. Shoemaker. And I asked them one time when Shell was still Lord Ray Guns up here, and how much money they had to bring out to cash the paychecks. And he said anywhere from $80,000 to $130,000 cash the paychecks on Brady.
Yeah. He also told me today that the Farmers and Merchants Bank had their own armored car. And I guess I've seen photographs of it, but that seems kind of funny. I mean, now you think of, armored car companies being armored car companies.
Well, in those days, you didn't have armored cars.
Yeah.
And they used to ride, those guys used to ride the bus, and then they had their own automobiles and just drove up in front of the bank and done it that way for years. And it hasn't been too many years that they've had the armored cars come around and pick up their money.
Yes, anyway, that would be
But
it just reflected on what kind of an influence the oil boom must have been on this area.
Well, the oil boom was not only an influence on this area, it was an influence on not only Long Beach, but the surrounding towns as well. The oil boom is responsible for Virginia City becoming North Long Beach.
How come? What do you mean?
Well, the Virginia City, when it was developed, that was sold out in 25-foot lots for just a few hundred dollars. And the people that were working people that had a hard time of getting along, you could go out and you could buy a home out in Virginia City real reasonable. And Virginia City and North Long Beach, for years and years, that was considered, well, that's the cheap part of town, see. But that isn't true anymore.
What part of the city do you think of as Virginia City?
Well, they north of the Union Pacific tracks.
All of that?
Yeah.
You don't just think of Virginia City as like around Dooley?
Well, right north of Dooley's, there is a street there named... Zane. Well, Zane was a friend of my father's, and he owned a couple apartment houses down on Daisy or Magnolia or someplace. And it's another deal. He bought that piece of land out there, and so he just put a street down the middle of it and subdivided the lot, named the street after himself. And then he moved out there. I used to go out and take that out there to see him when they were both getting up in age, and this was before Dooley came into the picture. But this is the way things happen. Somebody buy 5 acres and they cut it up and sell it off in lots. And Belmont Shore is all 25-foot lots when they were subdivided. Virginia City on the Beyond Market and over as far as Atlantic, a lot of that in there is 25-foot lots, the majority of it. I think out where you live is 50-foot lots.
Yeah, well, it's really different depending on what neighborhood you're in of North Long Beach.
Well, Virginia City was adjacent, really, in the beginning to Long Beach Boulevard. You see, when I went to Poly in 1926, then Atlantic didn't go through. Long Beach Boulevard went through as far as Walnut Park.
What's Walnut Park?
Well, it was Compton, and Walnut Park was south of Huntington Park.
Okay.
And there was another one in there. And these roads didn't go through. Now, when I was real young, Dad used to go to Boston.